Robots Radio presents
Fresh Tomatoes, the movie podcast.
I'm not usually a hat fan, but wow.
Every like a and dagger.
I'm really sipping on that dumb bitch juice today, and
yeah, I am. But you know what? Someday I just might grow out of that. But you will never stop being a jerk.
All chocolate cakes are good. You're a fascist.
It's hideous.
It's horrible.
It's home.
Angry white boy, let's go!
Hello, and welcome to Fresh Tomatoes, the movie podcast. The podcast for which there might be a scientific explanation, but do you really want to hear it? That's Chad Echolitz.
And that's Simone LaRue, bringing the fire from the beginning of the podcast. Simone, we are in such a golden age of life, you know, where we see science as an option rather than sort of,
I love it,
you know, fact. And you know, nothing makes it better and more sort of visual than cryptids, right?
I don't really care for cryptids, to be honest. I'm going to say this at the very top of the Mothman episode, so we've lost half our listeners. But what I do care for is the people who really love cryptids, because I think, like, there's this fun special thing where, like, they found this interesting thing and, like, it can't really be explained, and no one actually really wants to explain it. It's more like the fun of, like, thinking about what it could be.
Yeah.
And I respect that. I really do. I like answers. And that's why I can't do cryptids.
And logic. And logic and science. Absolutely. Yeah. I completely get where you're coming from. I think, you know, for me, it's also why I love cryptids. Like, I'm not a super fanatic of cryptids. I just do love the kind of thing. It's sort of like, the world is such a big place. Mm. And you know, the world is such a ridiculous place. Why wouldn't you want to live in a world where there is Mothmen and fucking Sasquatch and Bigfoot and all these kind of things? Because life would just be kind of boring without it. Not necessarily boring, but just, like, not as whimsical. And I want to live in a very ridiculously whimsical world.
I totally agree. My only thing is I have a lot of anxiety, and I'm a very impatient person. So any story that ends with, "but we don't know," just bothers me.
Oh, yeah. Really gets under your skin?
Yeah, I don't.
Is that why you, like, don't do anything to do with the ocean as well? Because it's all, "we don't know."
And I know, like, a lot of science is like, "we think this is right, but we don't know." Mm-hmm. But, like, there's been some empirical research done into why they think this is right and why it seems like, so that's me. I love cryptid-loving people.
Yes, yes. They are the most enthusiastic.
Yes.
It's the most healthy version of conspiracy theorists, really.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, that's true. There's just this phenomenon out there. We're trying to understand it. That's it.
Yeah, exactly.
They're biologists at heart, really.
Yeah, yeah. Cryptozoologists, that's what they're called,
right.
Which I think is
wonderful.
Yes.
That's a term.
That is a thing. That is a thing. It's wonderful. So for, like, the 1% of the listeners who don't know what cryptids are and what cryptozoologists are, basically it's any sort of mythical creature. I'm pretty sure you could have worked this out from, like, the beginning of the episode and what we're talking about, but just wanted to make it absolutely clear. It's sort of any mythical creature that has been sighted or, you know, kind of even just thought of. So unicorns would count as a cryptid. Bigfoot. And specifically today's episode's theme, the Mothman of Point Pleasant, West Virginia.
Ooh.
So we will be doing 2002's The Mothman Prophecy, and then we will also be doing the 2020's The Mothman Legacy. How something. It's definitely not wonderful. It's definitely something.
Yeah, it's I learned a lot today.
Okay, I'm glad. Look, at least you're coming away with something.
And at the same time, I learned nothing at all.
Yes, yes, it was very confusing. I think these two movies really did confuse the Mothman legacy more than it needed to be confused. Or, you know, more confused than it already was.
Mm.
So this is exciting. So let's see who gets to go first. What are you drinking today?
I'm having a red wine.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah,
okay.
It is nice. I'm really, I'm actually, I took a sip just now. I was like, oh, so I'm really enjoying it today.
That's lovely. That's good. I'm glad. I'm very, very happy.
What are you drinking?
There is, as I was saying to you before we started this episode, I'm moving my girlfriend into her new apartment, and we don't actually have any alcohol in the place yet. So I'm just drinking a lovely, lovely cup of tea with a little sheep on the mug.
That is a very cute mug, I was going to say.
Yeah, it's adorable. So yeah, nice little calming cup of tea, which is very nice. So
lovely.
So I guess that means we're starting with Legacy today.
Oh, cool. I definitely didn't fall asleep halfway through the movie and sleep through a good middle chunk of it.
That's fine, because I fell asleep through part of my movie. So we're going to be filling in each other. It's going to be great.
Well, there's not really much of a synopsis to give for Mothman Legacy. It is a documentary that explores the origin of the legend of the Mothman. It was created by, or narrated by, Lyle Blackburn and created by Seth Breedlove. It basically explores, like, the sightings of Mothman in Virginia from, like, the 1960s onward, and its build-up to the 1967 Silver Bridge collapse in West Virginia, and all of the different theories about what the Mothman could be. They interview some people who have seen the Mothman, and it really just asks a lot of questions and doesn't give a ton of answers.
No, it's sort of, it's wonderfully spitbally, isn't it? It's really good. I'm dying to know what's your,
what I got, my takeaway from it is, like, people don't really know what its intentions are or what it's there for or what it is, if it's even a Mothman, but people love it and they suspect it either had something to do with the Silver Bridge collapse, or it was an omen forewarning against the Silver Bridge collapse, or it had nothing at all to do with it.
I think C is the right answer there, right?
No, that would be crazy. Don't be ridiculous. It was never seen again after the collapse, Chad. How do you explain that?
I mean, except that it was the documentary. Okay, I'm not even looking into it, but the first bit I want to, I have to know what your cliffhanger is, like, before we move on to the actual story.
Oh,
of this
it's
thing.
Definitely, there's, like, that intro bit that's, like, very vague, okay. And it's about, like, fear and folklore and stuff.
Yes.
A story is a powerful thing. It can move us in unexpected ways. It can inspire hope or create a sense of longing. A story can manifest sadness or depression, laughter or tears. And yes, a story can instill fear.
But that last little, I think like the last 30 seconds or so, it's just like so weirdly unhinged.
Oh my god, it's beautiful. What a way to open a documentary.
What a way to start your documentary strong and say, we don't really understand what we're talking about, but no one does.
It's the musings of a madman. Like, I honestly heard that opening speech, and obviously it's narrated throughout with the same kind of nonsense logic, and I was like, I need to physically sit and read the transcript, because listening to this doesn't make sense to me. Like, I cannot like sort of comprehend the words that he's saying.
I understand them all in isolation, but all together I was like, wait, so what? Like, I'm not like a rhetorical speaker, you know? Like, I never studied rhetoric or putting together a good argument. I didn't study law. Mm-hmm. So I was like, maybe there's like some cleverness going on here that I'm just too dumb to understand.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. It was, the words were there because there is literally no dialogue to fill that section. Like, the opening scene is literally a woman painting Mothman in a river creek and then being visited by the Mothman. Yes. So she gets scared and runs away and leaves her paintings. And it's like, and the movie kind of goes, the documentary goes along in the same vein where it just sort of like throws out these random images. There's no, I think that's what really annoyed me about this one, was the fact that there was no actual evidence from like any of the sightings, like no photographs, like no actual 1960s, this is our thing, this is what happened kind of thing.
Yeah, it's not like the Enfield Haunting with the recordings, which I know are very sus, but like, there's nothing really. Except, like, some collective hysteria where a bunch of people saw the same thing, or at least they all think they saw the same thing. I don't know. I do think, like, I think it's very interesting. And I truly think that, like, the people in the documentary really believe what they saw. I don't think anyone's trying to pull the wool over anyone's eyes. I think this is a fairly harmless cryptid thing to believe in.
Yeah.
Thing to explore. Yeah, absolutely.
No, I completely agree with you. Yeah.
I was just very uncompelled by it. Because, like, yeah, you're right. Sometimes you need just, like, a little evidence, like a blurry picture or a strange recording or something. And you're like, oh, shit.
That is literally all I wanted. I just wanted, like, a picture where I could go, ooh, it could be. It also couldn't be. But, you know, like it's still very exciting. I mean, yeah, like Nessie.
Famously
even, like, Amityville. Yeah, like Amityville Horror with the little child behind the door. Famously faked photo, but still just real enough, just believable enough that you're like, okay, this place is fucked up. But yeah, like, I think, yeah, just a little shred of evidence instead of these people being like, oh, this is what I saw, and this is, you know, 30 years ago when I was a child, or after I had done an 18-hour shift and I was exhausted, or after I had been drinking all day. Like, it just felt like they got the worst people, and then they sort of, like, explained away what they saw by, you know, in their own narrative. And I was just like, oh, come on,
this is... There are all these, like, really horrible reenactments of these people's stories. Mm-hmm. I hate reenactments in documentaries. Like, I truly think that they're, like, the death
I think they're great.
Video journalism.
They're the death of video journalism, but the life of the underrated actor who's trying to break through. That is how they pay their rent.
The only place that there was actual room for reenactments is in that show Haunted, where people are talking about their ghost experiences. Like, that's fucking creepy. Like, that's what I want to see. But, like, a vague Mothman-shaped shadow or a glowing red eye did not do it for me.
It's the fact that you would have had to act against this. It's like, hey, do you want to be in our Mothman documentary? Oh, yeah, sure. I have nothing to do with the Mothman. Oh, no, you're going to be part of the reenactments. I just need you to look scared in this direction.
Or, like, vaguely concerned.
It's great. It's so good. I love it. I love it. That was one of my favorite things from that documentary was that. My other favorite thing from this documentary is just the fact that they were just throwing out sort of everything and any sort of theory. So from, like, top of my mind, it was portal through time, portal through another reality, demons from hell.
Aliens,
and then also a curse from a Native American tribe. Yes, I thought that one was very suspicious.
The other, which is just like, which is just some sort of folkloric creature that we've all willed into being, like a golem.
Yes. Why can't it be that simple that it was just a collective imaginations that we've created?
I mean,
oh, how gorgeous.
And I mean, yeah, they pretty quickly poo-poo the scientific suggestions. Like, maybe it's this giant crane. Because they're like, no, but how could it be so tall?
Yes, how could it be a crane? Why wouldn't it be a man-sized moth that we just love to see? That's, you know, oh, it's so good. I love what you said there about, like, the people in the documentary are super interesting. I mean, the guy who created the Mothman Museum and his daughter are just so lovely.
They're so nice. Like, they're so special. You can't be mad at them.
No, not even a little. Like, I want to go and visit their museum because it just looks like a lot of fun. And so, like, you know, there's that bit at the end, which, again, completely out of place, made no sense in this documentary, where he's just like, I want to live a life that's really kind, and that's all you can do in this life, is just be kind to each other. And it's like, that's really sweet, guy, but also, this is a documentary about the Mothman. Why aren't we talking more about the Mothman? Like, where did this documentary want to go?
This man and his museum.
Yes. Yes, and I think that's where they missed the point. I think this should have been a documentary, and the name even lends it to a documentary about this guy.
Yeah, and
the
Mothman
legacy. Yes, absolutely. That's what I cared about. I did not give a shit about really, like, finding out about more about the Mothman, really. Yeah.
And these weird, terribly written musings on the nature of fear and folklore.
Yes, definitely. But going back to your point earlier, the whole thing around it and what's supposed to make it really spooky is the fact that, like, the Mothman disappeared after the Silver Bridge collapsed into the Ohio River. But then, so the documentary gets to that point, and probably that's where you fell asleep. The documentary gets to that point, and then it goes, And then he was seen again in the 70s and the 80s and the 90s and the 2000s. And it's like, okay, so then
cool.
It defeats the whole purpose of the original myth.
Are you telling me that our movie with Richard Gere lied to me?
Oh, okay. I have issues with the Richard Gere movie, which we will get into in great depth. But we, yes.
Because Chad can be furious about very few things in this life. He watched the whole Mothman documentary with an open heart. But what he cannot stand is movies riddled with inaccuracies.
Okay. I'm going to bury my feelings and they're going to explode in the next half an hour, I promise you. So what did you enjoy about it? Like, what was your sort of, you know, what did you actually glean from the documentary? Nugget. Okay, yeah, let's move on to golden nuggets then. Yeah. Okay, what was your golden nugget for this one?
You know, I think the thing I liked about the documentary is, like, I feel like sometimes cryptid documentaries do this thing where they kind of make fun of the people or, like, visually don't take the people who are telling their stories seriously.
Mm-hmm.
Or, like, I don't know, there's some sort of cynicism on the part of the documentary maker. They're just portrayed as these, like, small-town hicks who don't understand anything. And, like, this movie, I think, like, really honored the fact that people were willing to share their stories and come forward about it and just treated them, like, really kindly, which I thought was nice. Because, again, I don't think that the Mothman legend is hurting anyone. It's kind of nice sometimes. And I like that the documentary had not an ounce of cynicism, really.
No. It was so pure at heart. And that is beautiful, especially given that it was made in 2020.
Who fucking loves the Mothman legend.
Exactly. And wanted to track it throughout time. And it's, you can't fault that. Yeah, I mean, I've already mentioned sort of mine in the fact that it's just, you know, it's the man who runs the Mothman Museum and his wonderful daughter and their sort of relationship. And it's just really cute. You know, he's just, you know, there's that bit where the daughter's like, oh, every time there's the Mothman Festival comes to town, our population doubles. You know, Point Pleasant is only 10,000 people, and all these people flock from all around the world for the Mothman Festival, and my dad does this, and I'm going to take over. And I was like, this is family. This is family coming together over the most ridiculous thing,
did
and
you
that's
cry?
So human. I didn't cry this time. No. I saved my tears for Richard Gere.
Oh, boy.
So would you recommend this?
I think if this is your bag, like, go for it. Mm-hmm. It's not the worst cryptid documentary I've ever seen by a mile.
Uh-huh.
The production value is pretty good. If you like a nice reenactment, like, I don't hold that against you. I just hate them.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're into cryptids, if you want to know more about the Mothman legend, maybe you've seen it around. It's very fun and sexy at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
This is a great place to get, like, a quick synopsis of what you've missed.
Yeah, exactly. It takes you really right through from like the 50s to modern times, so it will be good for you that way. Yeah, I agree. I think this is the perfect Netflix documentary. You know, you've watched Seaspiracy, you've watched Cowspiracy, you've watched the Michael Jordan one, The Last Dance, that's what it's called. Ooh. And you're really running low on documentaries, and then you just see The Mothman Legacy, and it's perfectly Netflix. It's so lovely and darling. I would recommend it if you're into documentaries and you just want to, like, take your brain out. This is not a serious documentary, and you just, it's pleasant. It's really pleasant.
Or if you want to watch, like, a spooky documentary with someone who doesn't like spooky things.
Yes.
This is perfect.
Yes. It's a good honeypot.
It's not scary.
No, it's not. It's a good honeypot. We've spoken about these honeypots where it's just like, oh, it's not scary, and then you put it on so that the person who doesn't like spooky things trusts you, and then you put on something that's actually spooky.
Then you put on Haunted afterwards.
Yeah, and then it makes them poo themselves, but you win because you got to watch it with a loved one. Yes, the honeypot. We love a good honeypot.
Ahoy there, ye landlubbers. Avast, my name is Captain Logan, and I'll be your guide out on the Sea of Thieves. If you love the idea of stealing treasure, cutting down cursed skeletons, fighting off krakens, and raiding forts filled to the brim with shinies, then Sea of Thieves is the game for you. Join me each week as I dive into the news and bring back the nuggets of information that any sailor worth their weight in salt would desire. You don't have to be a pirate legend to gain access to my podcast. Just search for Keelhauled, a Sea of Thieves podcast in your podcast app of choice, or head over to robotsradio.net or captainlogan.podbeam.com and get ready to set sail for adventure. Arr.
Well, talking about bad honeypots, Simone, shall we talk about the 2002 Richard Gere, The Mothman Prophecy, based off of the book by the same name?
Let me ask you this, Chad. What is the longest movie ever? And I'm going to tell you now, it's not Lord of the Rings Extended Edition.
It is definitely not Lord of the Rings Extended Edition. It is this movie. It is the 2002 Mothman Prophecy. I thought that I had aged with this movie.
I could feel myself aging.
My girlfriend watched this movie with me. She never takes naps, but she took a nap in this movie because it was just so long. When I saw that it was an hour and 59 movies, it was an hour and 59 minutes, I was shocked. But then when I reached the end of it and I was like, how is this not 3.5 hours long? I don't understand. I feel like I've been here all day.
Truly. I got to the end of the movie. I turned to Rudy. I was like, this is 3 hours of my life that I'll never get back. And it was only two. I don't know. Much like Mothman, this might have exploited a pocket in time or something. Like,
yes.
My
yes,
God.
100%. It exploited a pocket in time, but it also took from us way more than it deserved to take from us. And I'm so mad at it. Okay, shall I tell you the synopsis? I didn't write this, so it's going to be a bit all over the place.
By all means, Chad. Like, there's a whole lot of middle that you can just kind of breeze through.
Skip through. Yeah. Okay. So we start with John Klein, who is played by Richard Gere, who is this reporter for the Huffington Post. He is married to Mary Klein, played by Deborah Messing, who does a spectacular performance. It's brilliant. So they, the movie opens with them going to view a house. They go into the house. They really love it. So they decide to buy it. On the way home, they're feeling all excited and horny and really happy. So they're speeding home when suddenly, out of nowhere, Mary sees something with bulging red eyes coming towards the car. She freaks out, she swerves the car, ends up whacking her head really, really hard against the window of the car and blacking out. John takes her to the hospital and they find out that she has a really, really rare tumor in her brain. Only 1 in 600,000 people get it, but
that's,
you know,
like,
they
don't. Only like that's yeah. very that's
yeah.
actually pretty
that confused me
worrying frankly
yeah
as a number
yeah yeah maybe in like you know that's what really okay we'll get into it
no,
properly
sorry
but yeah,
sorry
yeah.
I didn't mean to interrupt.
We'll come back to that point because that is another point that I want to bring up in this movie, the inconsistencies of time. So we'll get into that. So, you know, they're really sad, whatever. Unfortunately, over time, even though it looks like Mary's going to recover, she eventually dies. So John Klein is really upset about this, but he just has to go on with his life. 2 years later, he is still trying to, like, recover from this loss of his wife and everything, and he is doing an interview with a politician. So he has to go to another state. I can't remember which state, maybe Chicago, can't remember. So he decides to drive there. Sort of an hour into his journey, his car dies. Sort of he loses track of time and his car dies. He doesn't know where he is. He's in the middle of nowhere. So he goes up to this house and the guy from the house tries to shoot him. John is obviously confused. The cop from the town, the local sheriff, Connie
Laura
Mills,
Linney.
Played by Laura Linney. It was so good to see her. She comes, kind of de-escalates the situation. Everything's hunky-dory. The whole issue with this is that the farmer, whose name is, who's Ed Fleischman, played by David Eigenberg, he has basically said that John Klein has come to his house 3 nights in a row and basically harassed him and his wife at the exact same time, 2:30 in the morning. What makes this even weirder, apart from the fact that John Klein hasn't been to the house 3 times in a row, is that he is now in Point Pleasant, Ohio, which is kind of 400 miles out of the direction where he was supposed to be going. Plus, he also traveled 400 miles in an hour. So there was like a time rift or something, plus this whole thing with him being there for 3 days. It's all very fucking weird and, you know, he doesn't know what's going on. Him and, what's her name? Connie sort of chat, they sort of clear everything up, and then a whole bunch of shenanigans ensue. Everyone's sort of like going a little bit mental. No one knows what's kind of happening. Connie also tells John that the town, like, weird things have been happening in the town, so you know, everyone's a little bit on edge. Eventually, Ed and John become friends, and that's when Ed reveals to John that he's been seeing things, he's been having visions and really bad headaches, and that's when he reveals to John as well that he heard a voice which said that 99 people are going to die on a flight or something like that. They obviously don't believe him, they go on about their business. Next day on the news, a flight has crashed, and 99 people are dead. So it's all like, oh my god, he kind of predicted this. Who is this person, you know, who told Ed about this whole thing? As the movie develops, more of these prophecies come through. They realize that it's a guy whose name I can't remember, something like Idrin Koldberg or something. Yeah. I can't really remember. It's not really super relevant, but it's this like ethereal subject who only phones John and Ed.
Yeah, and his voice supposedly couldn't have come from human vocal cords.
Yes, it was all electromagnetic. I think that's what they said it was, which is fun. Yeah, makes sense. So as the movie progresses, John is getting more and more crazy. He's starting to see Mary everywhere that he goes, but at the same time, he's kind of like also falling in love with Connie. It's not really explained. Just want to let that vehicle go. Cool. It's not really explained. Sort of the time progression in this movie is very, very weird. Suddenly it's Christmas, and it's New Year's, and, you know, John has been spending all of this time in Point Pleasant, and all of this weird shit's happening. So next thing he gets a message from the futuristic non-human entity who basically says there is going to be a massive tragedy on the Ohio River. John thinks that this is going to coincide with the visit from a local politician at the chemical plant, and so he tries to warn the politician. The politician's like, nah, you're crazy, and he goes to the chemical plant anyway. Turns out nothing actually happens at the chemical plant. Everything is hunky-dory. John is obviously very upset about this because he believed that this this prophecy would come through. He heads back home to his home state of Washington. And that's when Connie calls him and is like, oh, don't be alone on Christmas. Come back to Point Pleasant. You were just here an hour ago. I don't know why I didn't say it then. And he's like, oh, no, but the voice said that Mary's going to phone me from the great beyond. And sort of he eventually is just like, nah, fuck this, and throws the phone before Mary can phone him and heads on back to Point Pleasant. He is then at the entrance to the Silver Bridge on the Ohio River, when he suddenly realized that this was the prophecy all along. This was the great tragedy that would befall the Ohio River. He tries to get everyone off the bridge, doesn't really work, 36 people die, but Connie is also on the bridge, but he is able to save her. The movie ends with them being sort of amazed by the fulfillment of dreams and prophecies, and it's all great. And not once is a Mothman seen in this movie. Not once.
I mean, there are like some shadows. Mothman flies over the hood of the car at the beginning.
I'm so mad at this.
You know what? I'm just going to let you feel this out for a bit.
Thank you. You can't call a movie The Mothman Prophecies and then have shadows of a Mothman.
Did you want to see the full Mothman?
I wanted the Mothman to be there constantly. I wanted him over John's shoulder.
Sometimes he appeared in reflections when John like walked away and stuff.
Yeah, but like maybe like once or twice. I feel
like
a very huge lock.
A little needy.
The movie is called The Mothman Prophecy, Simone. Not The Mothman Skulks Around in Shadow.
Yeah, if it were called that, then we'd see more of him. This is about his prophecies, not about him.
Yeah, but he's not even mentioned.
Everyone
he's mentioned
knows
like once.
This whole thing is just a metaphor for Richard Gere's grief.
This is how it all started. This is what actually started the Mothman Prophecy. It was just John Klein when he was back in like writing the book with Mothman Prophecy, and he was just trying to deal with his grief, which I'm not even sure actually happened because I haven't actually done any research on John Klein. But I'm pretty sure the book is not about his love story with Connie, you played by Laura Linney. I'm pretty sure it was about the Mothman.
I mean, but who could, like, okay, so you're gonna put Laura Linney and Richard Gere in a movie together and not have them fall in love?
What I love about this as well, and we didn't mention this about your documentary, The Mothman Legacy, is the director of The Mothman Prophecy was in your documentary.
Is that a fact?
Yes, he was there. He was chatting about the movie. And sort of why he chose to like pick up the project and everything. And the dude is great. He's typical LA, and he's just so lovely about it. And he's just like, this was my interaction with cryptid zoology and things. And he's like, you know, really making it about him. And it's like, well, this reflects in your terrible, terrible movie, my guy. And he's like, oh, people come up to me all the time and they're like, they love my movie. And I was like, well, that's suspicious. Why would they do that? I don't understand that. It's not a good movie.
The thing with this movie, though, is it's, like, very much that thing of, like, a lot of people talking about what they saw and fucking nothing happening. Like,
yes.
Ed keeps talking about his experiences. People keep talking about their sightings. And he just looks, like, perturbed. He's like, what does it mean? And then he speaks to, like, one expert who's like, oh, I think he's, like, an omen for bad events.
Yeah.
And then that's basically, like, at the end of the movie. And we've already gone through, like, a whole fucking hour of Richard Gere just looking perturbed.
Yeah, long distant looks into the distance and lots of silent moments. Lots and lots of silent moments. Although, and this goes to my cliffhanger, which I'll give you now, is the dialogue for this movie is absolutely insane. And so that leads into my cliffhanger, which is this.
Eddie, look. She's not Mary. Not by a mile. But you know what? No one ever will be.
Which is the scene where Richard Gere, before he leaves to go to Point Pleasant, he chats to his work friend, and his work friend goes, she's not married, John. And at this rate, and you know what? None of us will be. And it's like,
no, you misheard.
What
you
does that mean?
You misheard. He said, she's not Mary, John, but none of the women you meet will be.
Oh, okay. That dialogue makes sense then. But even so, I'm going to stick to my guns. This is a hill I will die on. Because there is that other bit in the movie where John's in the hospital with Mary and the weird fucking nurse comes in and is like, she knows. She's been drawing angels, and then fucks off into the distance. And it's like,
what a
okay, dialogue.
Thing to say to a grieving man.
And then later in the movie, he sees a doorway that kind of looks like the silhouette of the nurse, and he's like, brings back that memory, which was a very interesting choice of space and time and 2 hours of my life.
There was like a whole thing where like people are placing phone calls that they didn't place.
Yeah.
And, like it. I was like, okay, so Mothman is doing this. We have no sense of motive or why or why I'm supposed to care about any of this. This is not building towards, like, and even, like, the bridge collapse scene itself, which I feel could have been, like, done really tight and been, like, a very good moment of tension. It's ponderously slow.
There's no tension with it. It's just
running
sort of
up and down,
pieces
like, oh,
of
get out of the cars.
Off.
And people are just like, what? And you can see a cable snapping and people are like, what? And it's like, if you're on a bridge and you see a bunch of people gunning it off the bridge, don't ask questions.
Yeah, you move. You move so fast.
And
you know?
That isn't me like shitting on like the actual people who died in that accident. That's me shitting on this poor filmmaking that like makes everybody look like the slowest idiots on the planet.
Yeah, I don't know about you, but if I'm in a car and I'm on a bridge, I immediately start to panic. Like, whether something happens, like if I'm in traffic on a bridge, I immediately start to panic. I'm already planning my exit routes. I'm like trying to like see how far which end of the bridge to run to. No, I'm not a trusting of bridges person either. So yeah, knowing that people in this movie are just like, huh? Why would I just sit on it? Why would I move? I heard a cable snap.
Oh my God.
Bro, if I heard even like, if there was a slight breeze and the bridge just moved a little bit suspect,
I'll get my car later. Thank you so much.
Yeah. I don't care that I'm holding up traffic for everyone else. That's fine. You know what? I want to live today. That's my choice.
You can drive around me. I've got my hazards on. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Straight up. Okay, so this is my biggest gripe with this movie, is the insanity of the time. Okay, yes. So Mothman is happened. The Silver Lake Bridge crash collapse happened in like 67 something around somewhere around there, 1967. So yeah, so now you're telling me that Richard Klein, because okay, so this is based on the book that Richard Klein wrote, and it really just misses and folds in various events to sort of like fit the narrative that they wanted to make. They're like, okay, there's this very real person, John Klein, who wrote a book about the Mothman prophecies, and now we're gonna make this movie about his struggle with losing his wife, and then also his ability to talk to a time-traveling weird vocalist, and about weird prophecies of doom. And it's like, okay. And then we're just gonna do the silver bridge collapse anyway. We're just gonna fold that in, mm-hmm. And it doesn't speak to the Mothman prophecy. It doesn't speak to the Mothman sort of mythology. It doesn't speak to John Klein's actual book. It's just like a weird romp, and I'm so confused.
Yeah, no, I have nothing to add to that. You're absolutely right. I watched this whole movie. I was like, why? Why is this happening? Why do I have to sit through this? I almost turned it off. Like, Chad, this was one of the first movies where I was like, I might just not finish this because I truly cannot bear this. I've got things to do today.
That is a lot, because, I mean, we watch a lot of bad movies, but if this was the one that almost broke you...
It was so long.
Damn.
It was so long.
Oh, man, it was. It really did feel long. I think my favorite part was... My girlfriend was like lying on my lap while we were watching this, and she just goes, really like whispers it. She just goes, "Oh, Richard Gere, you choose some really bad movies." And I almost died. That was just so perfect. She was just like talking directly to Richard Gere in his mess.
He needed to hear it.
Yeah, I mean, look, he was great in this. To be fair, he really pulled it out. Against anyone else who was trying to act in it, it was him giving it his all, and I appreciated that.
Laura Linney Aswell, a fantastic actress who deserved better. Deborah Messing, playing the wife who's going to die in 5 minutes.
Yeah, I thought that was very sad because, she got done dirty by this movie because she was so lovely.
The moment you see a couple that's, like, deliriously happy, you're like, oh, someone's going to die.
Someone's going to die. Yeah. It was so good in that, no, that wasn't good. That was just, the characters were good. At least, or like those three were good. I don't really have anything else nice to say about this, unfortunately.
Yeah, I would not recommend.
No, I wouldn't recommend either. It's one of those that you can just skip. Is there a golden nugget for you? Like anything that you can pull out?
You know, I will also say the guy who played Ed, his performance was actually fantastic. Like he truly did an amazing job of playing a guy who feels like he's losing his mind. He did so well. He was the mainly sympathetic character in the whole thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Couldn't agree with you more. For me, the golden nugget is the very few really intricately well done scenes. So, even though there was like no sort of gravitas to the bridge collapse, actually collapsing the bridge was pretty intense and it was really good. There was also that scene where Richard Gere is on the phone and he's up against the mirror, and the mirror does like it's his reflection, but it does like out of time and it's out of sync. And that is very cool. That was really impressive filmmaking. I really appreciated that. That was nice. And it's for those golden moments. Don't watch it because it's 2 hours for about 30 seconds worth of actual film. The joy to risk ratio is way off on this.
Yeah.
Don't watch it, guys. Just stick to Legacy. It's a great film.
Yeah. Stick to Legacy and then just figure out Mothman on your own. Chad, speaking of, now that we're towards the end of this episode, what do you think Mothman is? Where do you fall?
Ooh, that's great. I think Mothman is just a giant bird. They mentioned it in Legacy. Native Americans have the belief in the Thunderbird.
Thunderbird, yeah.
I love that idea. You know, they did a really beautiful sort of motif of that in American Gods in the TV show.
Oh,
that
yeah.
Some really cool, like, visuals of the Thunderbirds. But yeah, I believe that the Mothman is the Thunderbird. I really do. I think he's just, you know, the last remaining one, and he's just out there trying to protect his land of West Virginia. You know, the Appalachian Mountains. That's my feeling. What do you think the Mothman is?
Oh, I think he's like a collective hallucination. Genuinely, like, you know, it's so area specific. And all of these people, like, it starts off, like, the visions start off being like, oh, it was like a bird-like thing. It was an owl thing. It was a man thing. And, like, slowly over time, as people start, like, talking about it more, it starts honing in on this moth thing with glowing eyes.
Yeah.
But that's just an amalgamation of what everyone's seen so far, and then people applying that context to then what they do see. And again, it's not that I think these people are liars or that they're idiots or anything like that. Like, I don't actually know what then the real thing is. I'm just not convinced that Mothman is a Mothman.
Yeah, I feel you. Yeah, it makes... Yeah, I get you. I mean, the fact, like, in the documentary that you covered, they actually say, like, most of the sightings were in what's known as, like, the TNT zone, because there's, like, lots of chemical runoff and things.
Yeah.
It would make sense to be a hallucination. Yeah. You know, people going into a chemical-ridden area that's just completely decimated by chemicals would hallucinate. Like, it's very plausible.
Yeah. Not to be a downer, I also found the image, the one lady talked about how she saw Mothman on her roof in the rain with his little wings wrapped around him, and he looked so cold and sad.
I want that picture. Mothman. That little picture. I want that. Like, it's so fucking cute. You could just, like, add a little umbrella, and he's just, like, shielding himself. It's beautiful. Yeah. I like that, like, about your documentary as well. Is, like you were saying, there was just, like, authenticity about it, and even in the pictures, and, like, trying to paint Mothman as this cute little bird who's just, like, unhappy with the rain.
Cold.
Mm. Oh, just invite him in.
Hey, what do Mothman
so then eat? So I've got a follow-up question for you based on your question. What is your favorite cryptid?
I don't know enough cryptids to have a favorite, I don't think.
Well, like, Nessie, or, like, Bigfoot, or, you know.
I don't have very strong feelings about any cryptids. I feel like Bigfoot has a very toxic fan base, so I don't really want to, like, go there.
Fair.
I don't know. Maybe, like, the Chupacabra. That's fun, right?
Yeah, you stole mine, because I love the Chupacabra, too. I think he's great. A little Mexican gremlin who goes around slaughtering cows and things. Brilliant. Absolutely fantastic.
Why not?
Yeah. Yeah, I watched the documentary on the Chupacabra once, and everyone was just like, oh, it's just a dog. Like, literally, everyone they interviewed was just like, yeah, it's just a wild dog. It's just a rabid dog. And, like, they were trying to really push it.
And they're like, no, but the teeth marks. It's a dog.
It's a dog. It's a dog. It's a rabid dog. And that was it. And it was so funny to just watch all these people.
I will say that I like the Mothman fandom the most. Those people, it's just so wholesome. People are just like, look at this odd thing.
Yeah, exactly. It's just lovely. It's just really great. Shall we, for our 1,000th episode, go to Point Pleasant and visit the Mothman Museum?
Sure. Sure. Yeah, that's a thing we could do.
You know, it's two and a half years per 100 episodes, so that is
it's 20 many years of podcasting.
Yeah. So when we'll be like 48, we'll book a trip. That sounds great.
Awesome. Yeah, I'll go to the States and go straight to Virginia. Bye, New York. Bye, California. Bye, Miami. Bye, Disney World. Oh. Don't want none of that.
No, Appalachian Mountains. Let's do it. Let's go visit a weird
Let's
little town.
Let's go
super
rural.
Excited. Yeah. Oh, man. Okay, so Simone, what is your gratitude for this week?
My gratitude is actually this little cat next to me right here.
Oh.
He's a bit injured at the moment. He's got an abscess.
Oh, bless him.
Next to his tail, so he's feeling a little sorry for himself. I had to take him to the vet today. And, yeah, he's just very sad, and I always get so worried when they get injured. Like, they're just he's my little baby, this one. He's my shadow. He follows me around the whole day. And he loves me, and he snuggles me at night, and I feel sad that I can't do more for him, and now I have to spray his little butt twice a day. for this abscess to get better, and he hates it.
Oh, bless him. Bless him. So you're just grateful for, like, having him in your life and loving him.
Just love him so much. He's such a little brat.
Oh, he is your baby, without a question. Yeah.
What's your gratitude?
My gratitude, I mean, it might be a little premature in the fact that, you know, we are definitely not out of the pandemic. Guys, seriously.
Please just wear your fucking masks. Get your fucking vaccine if you can.
Get a vaccine, please. The Delta variant is no joke. And if we don't get this under control, there will be more variants. It will be worse. And it's just going to be like fucking never ending.
I'm tired.
I'm so tired of it. But that being said, we have come out sort of the really dangerous heavy part. I want to knock on wood so fucking hard. We've come out of the most, like, the worst of it, like the 2020 of it all. And I'm just really grateful, like, all my friends, all my family have sort of come out of it okay. You know, no one has sort of, like, in my life has, like, lost anyone, has, like, been sort of, you know, detrimentally psychologically affected by it. Everyone's sort of like, we've had our ups and downs, vote. We definitely have. But overall, we've come out the other side okay.
Yeah, you're right. We're both employed.
Exactly. And I'm really grateful for that fact. I'm really grateful that, everyone I know has sort of just come through the other end in a good manner. And that makes me very, very happy. And I'm very grateful for that.
Yeah, I like that. That's very sweet. Yeah.
So, Simone, next week, it's one of the funniest things I realized is that our last episode before this one was our August roundup because we're terrible podcasters. Our next episode is our September roundup.
Oh, that's funny.
Which is brilliant. So we've done one episode in September that wasn't a roundup. So that is fucking great. We are such good podcasters.
In all fairness, so guys, September is like our birthday month, so it was always going to be like a little messy.
That's true.
And like Chad said, stuff is opening again. We're getting our lives back, so we might be like a little bit less consistent with posting.
Exactly. But we will still try and bring you episodes as frequently and as in the correct order as possible. And we'll find something if we don't, you know. We'll be there for you. Don't you worry. Just like Friends says, I'll be there always.
Chums.
We love chums. Ross and Rebecca. Russ and Rebecca.
Yeah. One of my favorite roles of all time.
Ah, it's perfect. Good old Michael Sheen. So for next week, for our September monthly roundup, we are doing Amazon's Cinderella and Afterlife.
Afterlife of the Party.
Sorry, Afterlife of the Party. For some reason, on my notes, I just have it as Afterlife. I need to... This is exactly what we're talking about. This is exactly sort of the issues that we have. That's it. Afterlife of the Party and Cinderella. Should be really fun. I'm excited to see what September has had for us.
Also, love a good fun teen romp.
Yes, exactly. Even though we are bordering on 30...
I mean, we're about the age of the actors playing the teens, so.
Yeah, I think it all works out. It's fine. Yeah. Well, guys, thank you so much for listening. We really do appreciate you. Please leave us a review, leave us a rating. It really does help us. And if you want to start a conspiracy about us, maybe that we're the same person, just in, you know, filming this twice, just one person filming it twice, or that Simone actually has wings, or the reason that you don't see my hands ever in these videos is because they are made of, you know, claws. Just please do that and spread that around the internet. We would love that.
But be kind, guys. And Chad's really insecure about his claws.
Please don't be mean about my clothes. teach me to love. But if you want to talk to us directly about your conspiracy theories, please do. And where can they do that, Simone?
Oh, God. Please tell us all about it on Facebook or Instagram at Fresh Tomatoes Podcast, on Twitter at Fresh Tomatoes MP. Email us your long-winded theories at freshtomatoespodcast@gmail.com.
And QAnon members need not apply.
Oh, God,
but
yeah.
No. Yeah, no. 100%.
We're conspiracy lights.
Exactly. We don't need none of your bullshit. No. No, thank you.
No.
But to everyone else, as we say at the end of every episode, we love you and there's nothing you can do about it.
We love you and there's nothing you can do about it. Goodbye. Goodbye.
My name is Brian Burton. It's been 26 years since the bombs fell. And since I've left the vault, I've been trying to rebuild. But this isn't the Appalachia that I remember. There's so much more to everything going on. And I promise to find the answer. So if you're out there, if you're listening, just hone in on these coordinates. Remember, there's a place for you at the end. Omega.
The Omega Broadcast Fallout Story is available on iTunes, Spotify, and many great podcasting sources.
In a world where solid-state electronics and vacuum tubes are still meta, people never stop loving atomic-powered everything. A chosen 500 stepped inside a subterranean vault to be spared the nuclear horror of the inevitable Great War. 25 years later, they emerge after the fallout settles to retake Appalachia. Among them, two former rivals whose blood feud will tear West Virginia apart and their epic struggle for survival. Chad, a vault bro who has a strength of 15, an intelligence of 2, and is a complete wasteland dickhead. Simon, a complicated anti-hero who chooses light and hope, but accidentally becomes a cannibal, and wakes up naked and afraid with a Scorch Beast Queen after a date goes terribly wrong. What? I mean, it's a wild wasteland, right? This dark humor radio drama will have you driving off the road and crawling out from under the fallout. Two men. One wasteland. And so many nukes. Chad, a Fallout 76 podcast, rated R. Now streaming on your holotape player podcasty thing.
You've been listening to a Robots Radio podcast. Smart shows for interesting people. Check out all the shows at robotsradio.net.